giving me the chance to speak here in this. It's my first time at PI, actually, so I'm still, really impressed by the whole research environment and just the place itself. So I want to tell you about a recent paper that Olaf Olsson-Sachs and I wrote with the preprint number there. And I gave this talk last week at CERN, and I sort of overran. So now this talk is obviously going to be too short, so I expect to finish early because I wrote many of the equations on the board. So make sure to ask me lots of questions to slow me down. Okay, so what I want to tell you about today is a sort of outcome of some research we've been doing for a while, namely, how can you find the closed string spectrum on ADS3 cross S3 cross T4? And by that I mean find it in, say, the same way or a similar way to what we did in flat space. Right? In flat space, we know exactly what the energies of all the oscillators are. We can add all those up, and we can get the exact energy of any massive state. And the caveat in flat space, and for us as well, will be that we're going to be working at small string coupling. Right? That's the same as in flat space. In flat space, you never really calculate massive the energies of massive strings at one loop or at two loop and so on. You only do it at tree level. But we're going to be exact in alpha prime or exact in the radius of ADS. So we, you know, any state, not protected states, but just any state. And the thing I really want to tell you about today is how does this spectrum change as we vary the moduli of this background. So I'll review a little bit how this background has got 20 moduli, and it turns out to be quite a nice and neat story of how, when you change these moduli, what happens to the spectrum. Okay, so the plan is to first remind you of how you get ADS3 backgrounds as near horizon limits of 1 brains and 5 brains. It's sort of more to set some notation and to kind of introduce some simple ideas. Then I'll remind you of also how the moduli are obtained in these brain setups, both in the asymptotically flat regime and in the near horizon regime. Then I'll say a little bit about how we actually calculated this spectrum at a particular point in moduli space using integrable methods. And really the new stuff, the stuff that I really want to tell you about in detail, is about how this spectrum, how this integrable spectrum changes as we vary these moduli. Any questions? No, wait, sorry, we're still on this board. Okay, so the simplest thing you might do is you might take N1 D1 brains in directions 0, 1, and N5 D5 brains also in directions 0, 1, but wrapping a 4 torus in these directions 6, 7, 8, 9. And if you go to the near horizon limit, right, as we all know, the geometry reduces to ADS3 cross S3 cross T4 with N1 units of F3 Ramon-Ramon flux. We could instead, right, have done something slightly different. We could have done, we could have taken N fundamental strings, and I guess now everyone calls that K, Neve-Schwarz 5 brains, and you get the same geometry, but it's supported by Neve-Schwarz flux. Right? And I guess that's the reason people call it K here, because they think of a level K Vesumino-Witten model. So the first background, my red background, has got charges, obviously. I'm telling you very simple things, but it'll be useful for later. It's got a D1 brain charge of N1, and it's got a D5 brain charge of N5. And the yellow background has got a charge of NF1 and K. And both of these backgrounds, of course, have got 0 D3 brain charge and 0 D7 brain charge. And this is all completely obvious, right? I could consider a more general configuration where I take both the NS brains and the D brains, and I take certain number of each kind, and then I will have this flux supporting the same geometry and these charges, these mixed charges. Okay. So again, that's fairly straightforward. We could even consider more general configurations of the same geometry where these, some of these charges are non-zero, and I think a lot of what I say will also be true, but for now, let's just restrict to this, to these cases. Okay, so that's my lightning review of the background, of the family of backgrounds. So basically, I want you to think that there are four integers floating around that tell us which particular background we're in. But whichever background we're in, we're going to end up with the same number of moduli. So if we start off in the region that's asymptotic to the D-brains, far away from the D-brains, in other words, we're basically in flat space on a type 2B string theory on a 4 torus, what are the moduli? Well, we've got Gij, the metric, Bij, the dilaton, Ramon Ramon 2 form, 0 form, and 4 form. And together that adds up to 25. When you go near the brains, there's the famous attractor mechanism, right? So what happens is some of the scalars that were moduli get fixed to particular values that are determined by some BPS-type condition. And what happens, for example, in the D1, D5 brain background, when you go to the near horizon, the scalars that there are five, in each case, it's five scalars that gets fixed. And these are the volume of T4, the Ramon-Ramon 4 form with all indices on the 4 torus. And then for D1, D5, it's the anti-self dual B, Never-Schwarz, Never-Schwarz. And for this Never-Schwarz 5 brain and fundamental string background, it's the Ramon-Ramon anti-self dual. So by anti-self dual, I mean, you know, you've got a 4 torus, so there's a sort of SO4 floating around, and you decompose with respect to that SO4 into a self dual and an anti-self dual. Okay. So as you move around in this moduli space, this 20-dimensional moduli space, these five fixed scalars will have different values determined by the 20 moduli, right? So depending on what choice you make for your 20 moduli, these things are fixed to some particular values, and there is one simplest sort of point where you take the 4 torus to be just made up of 4 identical orthogonal circles. See, the volume here is, you cannot choose that. That's fixed. That's one of your fixed scalars. But all the other moduli and all the other scalars you can set to 0. Okay, so in some sense, that's the simplest point that you could be on because you don't have to worry about any of these extra scalars. And it's precisely at this point, for example, that Maldacena and Oguri did their analysis of the Vezzumino-Witten model, their famous analysis. And they were, of course, in the case where you only had fundamental strings charges and Never-Schwarz 5 brain charges. Okay? But for all sets of these charges, there is this very simple point. Okay, any questions?
So is the torus like in some subdual sort of radius? The
no, so the radius of the torus is actually fixed. So I haven't written it down here what it is, but it's fixed in terms of the charges and in terms of the other moduli, which in this case is nothing. So for example, if we were in the D1, D5 brain, it would be N1 divided by N5. And if we were in the Never-Schwarz 5 brain setting, it would be N fundamental strings divided by K Never-Schwarz 5 brains. And it's a mixed point, it would be something else. But there is some general expression. Okay, good. So that's my lightning review of everything that we know about ADS-free backgrounds. And for the past sort of little while, we've been trying to work out how to find the spectrum of these theories using integrable methods. Right? So we were inspired by all the work that's happened in ADS-5 and ADS-4, where such questions can be answered, and people really do know what the spectrum is. And initially, when we first wrote a paper with Kostya Zarembo and Andrei Babichenko, we thought, okay, well, you know, in a few months' time, we will just have solved that as well, and that'll be nice. But it turns out that actually this is quite a bit more involved, and it took a while longer. Maybe I'll say a little bit about what the spectrum looks like nonetheless. Okay? So the idea is that we're just going to look at the zero winding, zero momentum closed strings. So they have no momentum and no winding on the T4 directions. But they can have massive excitations on the T4 phi of any kind. And so it's still an open problem how to generalize this to non-zero winding and momentum. What you do then is, because typically, right, we have Ramon-Ramon fields turned on, so typically you can't use the RNS formalism like Maldacena and Noguri did, because we don't really know how to turn on Ramon-Ramon fields there. So we use the Green-Schwarz action, and we have to gauge fix that action. So there's kappa symmetry, and there's the light cone directions, and then there's a special way in which you can fix that. It's very painful, but once you do, you discover that it's possible to work out what the spectrum looks like. And the reason is, so once you've gauged this action, you can ask yourself, what does the 2-to-2 world sheet S matrix look like? So now we're on the world sheet. We only have physical degrees of freedom. We've completely gauge fixed. And we're going to scatter them, right? We're going to scatter these excitations on the world sheet and see what happens. Okay? It seems a very bad idea to do that, right? It's a very sort of very simple first step to take if you want to find out about what is the closed string spectrum. But as it turns out, that will be, we won't have to work any harder than the 2-to-2 S. So what happens is, you can calculate this S matrix exactly to all orders in R ADS. Oops. To all orders. So you might originally think that you'll have to go order by order in alpha prime, right? You scatter, something happens in the middle, two states hopefully come out, and then you consider more and more complicated perturbative diagrams in alpha prime, but actually it turns out that this S matrix is fully fixed by a sort of off-shell version of supersymmetry. So when you've gauge fixed your action, you still have some supersymmetry that commutes with the Hamiltonian. And if you now relax the level matching condition and see what the supersymmetry is like, so that's how you go off-shell, you discover that there are some central extensions that appear, these famous sort of Bizert central extensions, and it's those central extensions that really allow you to fix the S matrix from symmetries. So basically, if the S matrix has to commute with all these supercharges and central extensions, then it has to take a particular form, it's fully fixed, and that's how you know that, that's how you know it to all orders. So that in itself would be nice, of course, but it still wouldn't be very useful. Because then you should go and calculate, I don't know, 2-to-3 S matrix, or 2-to-4 S matrix, or maybe 3-to-3 S matrix. But it turns out that this S matrix also satisfies the Young-Baxter equation. So basically we've got integrable scattering on the world sheet. Right? So if you want, this is like some very, very souped up version of Sine-Gordon or something like that. And because your S matrix satisfies Young-Baxter, you can find the spectrum like you would do with a conventional kind of Bethe-Ansatz method. So what does the spectrum look like? Well, you have some excitations. So for example, very schematically here, I've got for you a transverse excitation on the free sphere or a transverse excitation on the ADS directions. Remember transverse because we had to fix light cone gauge. That's its super partner. And these guys have got mass squared equal to 1 on the world sheet. They're massive. On the other hand, we could have an excitation on the 4 torus, like this, or its super partner. And those ones have mass squared equal to 0. And it's actually the fact that those guys had mass equal to 0 that was quite challenging from a sort of technical integrability point of view, because it's much harder to consider massless scattering than massive scattering. So that's why we spent quite a bit of time showing that integrability works for these guys as well. But okay, so you build up such a state just like you would schematically in flat space. All of it acts on the BMN vacuum, right? So the E equals J state that you have in all these ADS cross S backgrounds. And of course, you have to satisfy the level matching condition, which says that the, I have a feeling I'm going to make a big mess here, that the momenta add up to 0. So we're used to flat space or plane wave, right? Where these things are integers. Here they are not integers. There's some general real numbers. And what are they? Well, you don't get to pick them freely. You have to solve some beta equations for these guys, which are some complicated algebraic equations, and in general you do it numerically. And once you've done that, then that's a particular state that you have. Any questions about that? Okay, so you might want to know what is the energy of this state. And the energy is just the sum of the energies of the individual oscillators, just like it would be in flat space. But each oscillator has got this dispersion relation. So the energy of each oscillator is given by this expression, so I'll talk you through it now, where Pi is one of these momenta that is allowed by the beta equations. So first of all, what do we see? Well, we see the masses. So you get to see, so this would be m equal to 1 here or 0 here, depending on which excitation you have. Then you have the level k, which is the charge, the Neve-Schwarz five-brain charge that your background has. And then you have a sort of slightly weird-looking combination, which we've called Q tilde, of N5, the Ramon-Ramon five-brain charge, and the Neve-Schwarz five-brain charge. And so all that I want you to think about Q twiddle is that it goes between 0 and 1. And in the case where it's equal to 1, we are in the Ramon-Ramon background, just purely Ramon-Ramon, no Neve-Schwarz charges, so H is equal to 0. And when Q twiddle is equal to 0, we're in the pure NSNS case. Okay? So it sort of interpolates between a pure Ramon-Ramon and a pure NSNS. And it does it, of course, technically in discrete steps. So we're almost there with this expression. We just need to know what this guy is. And this is the sort of famous H function that appears in integrability sort of analysis all the time. It first featured in ABJM. People typically write it as H of lambda because they know what lambda is in the gauge theory, in the dual gauge theory, the Toft coupling. But here, it's better for us to write it as R, the radius of ADS. Okay? And this function is the only thing that integrability doesn't determine. So we don't know what it is in this background. But I want to say that it's not, so that's not necessarily a bad thing, that just, you've still simplified the problem substantially, right? This function is the same. Notice it doesn't depend on the momenta. So it's exactly the same for each excitation. So in ABJM, for example, people were able to fix that function by looking at some localization calculation, and they knew what the exact energy of a particular state was, and then they fixed that function in terms of it. So if you know the exact energy of one particular state, then you will know H here. Good. And we know, the other thing I should say is we know that to leading order, this function H starts off as R squared over alpha prime, and then it gets corrections, 1 over r. And one could, in principle, calculate them perturbed. Okay. So, what is this useful for? Well, now I have a problem. Okay, so I'll have to. So, one thing that we can straight away obtain is the protected spectrum. And just looking at this dispersion relation, right, we want to find states whose energy is zero. Right? We want to find states which are not corrected, do not receive any quantum corrections. So in particular, if we pick the masses equal to zero and the momenta equal to zero, you see, you'll get zero here, zero here, and zero here. So the energy correction of such a state, if you added such a state, is zero. And of course, you want to organize these states into multiplets of the superconformal algebra. And the highest weight states, once you do the analysis, look like this. They're just the fermionic. See here, I have these massless fermions, the superpartners of the four bosons. And they look like this. So Pi equal to zero. So they're fermions. There are four of them because there's four bosonic coordinates, four fermionic guys. And you can have any number of them. And this is still a highest weight state. And in the BMN analysis, right, you tell me what J is. Remember, BMN states are E equals J. So you pick your integer J, and then you have a Clifford algebra of four fermionic creation operators. So you have 16 states for each J. Okay? And the nice thing is that this matches precisely De Boer's calculation from 98, which he did in supergravity and in the symmetric N T4 orbifold. So in the sort of putative CFT2 dual. So, but it's not just that it matches it, right? This result at this particular point in moduli space, in a sense, proves for you that these states are protected, right? This is a... So these are, I'm just telling you a sort of, you know, there's a lengthy calculation, but I'm telling you that these are the highest weight states that give you new protected multiplets. So you have to, I mean, you have to organize everything into multiplets. So if you acted with some other things, you might get descendants of those, for example. And these are the highest weight states. So you have to just make sure that those are the ones. I'm not really... Okay. So, yeah, so as I was saying, this actually proves that these states are protected, no matter what the value of the radius of ADS is at this particular point in moduli space. And so depending on who I speak to, I hear that that's something that is or isn't a renormalization theorem that's known. In any case, this is a completely different way of getting the same result. It's just a stringy derivation of that. Now, the nice thing is that, I'm not sure if I said it at the beginning, but a lot of what I say today is about this background. But there is a second background, which I won't talk much about, but if you've got some questions, you can ask me afterwards, where you can replace the T4 by an S3 cross S1, and many of the things that I'm talking about go through completely painlessly in this background as well, even though from a CFT point of view, this background is much less understood. So one thing that we could, when we had these results, we could straight away, for example, write down what is the protected spectrum on this background. And the old calculations of De Boer and collaborators from 99 now were not correct. And the reason they were not correct is that, well, I guess those were the days when everyone was really, really in a hurry, right? And they needed to put out lots of papers. And so they made an assumption that all supergravity states, when you, a very reasonable assumption, that if you did a Kaluza-Klein reduction, that all the supergravity states that you got would organize themselves into short multiplets. And it turned out that they do. It is possible to arrange them into short multiplets. But actually, if you do the analysis more fully, you discover that even though they fit into short multiplets, they are actually not short multiplets. So they tried not to have to calculate the Laplacian on ADS. They tried just to do the free sphere reductions. Right? And more recently, Rajesh Gopakumar and collaborators, sort of at the same time as we put out this paper, they did the supergravity calculation really fully. And indeed, this is precisely the protected spectrum that they get in the sort of more complete supergravity calculation is the same as what we get from integrability. It's in particular a much smaller spectrum than what people expected previously. Okay. Any questions? Okay. So everything that I've said here, right, applies, it would seem, to all sets of these charges. Right? So the immediate question might be, why don't we just go to the pure NSNS flux background? We know what the spectrum there is. Maldacena and Oguri told us what the spectrum is. And why don't we just try to match it? So, now I'll tell you something that's was what the understanding of it was before our paper with Olaf. And hopefully I'll say a bit afterwards about how actually we can do that. So the Vesemino-Witten point, right, was this, I'm getting my boards not working very well, but if you remember, was this point where Q twiddle was equal to zero. So we've got the S matrix and the Bethe equations for all values of Q twiddle, so let's just set Q twiddle equal to zero. And the nice thing is, you sort of get happy at first, and you say, ooh, the S matrix and the Bethe equations are finite in this limit. You get some expressions. But then you think a little bit harder, and it turns out that the way we constructed this S matrix, right? I told you, you involved having some off-shell supersymmetry algebra, which had some central extensions, some non-trivial central extensions. And those central extensions themselves are actually proportional to Q twiddle. So the central extensions, which are super important, so they go to zero. And you know, the way Beisert originally could fix his S matrix and the way we can fix our S matrix is precisely because you have these off-shell central extensions. If they are zero, you're not really that constrained. So you don't really know if this finite answer is correct, or whether something special happens at this point. You're no longer really constrained. You get a finite answer, and so that's definitely worth investigating what does that answer mean, but you sort of in two minds as to whether it could work. So the conclusion until recently was, you know, we're like a Ramon drug addict. We need just a little bit, right? We need just one DeFi break. If we have that, Q twiddle is non-zero, doesn't matter how small it is, it's non-zero, and everything that we know from integrability still works.
Well, the problem is that this Q twiddle is discrete.
Yes. Yes. And the problem is also, that's right, it's discrete, and the problem is also that you're actually in a different background, right? So the CFT people, who do Vesemino-Witten CFT theory, right? They're in a background where you just have fundamental string and Neve-Schwarz five-brain charges. Here, if you turn this one on, you're actually in a different background, right? You have different charges. So you sort of feel like you're close, but not really. Okay. So that's the status of things before. And now what I want to do is I want to tell you about how this spectrum changes when you turn on the moduli, the 20 moduli. And I'm going to start with a slightly more boring case, so I hope you don't all fall asleep, of the D1, D5. But it'll sort of illustrate a little bit what are the dangers and how it goes through. And then I'll go back to doing a bit better than this. So D1, D5 and we can start with some flat space intuition, right? We're going to go very easy at first. If I'm in flat space and I'm on a four torus and I have states which have zero winding or zero momentum and I squish my torus or I turn on a B field, those states don't care, right? Nothing changes. The winding and momentum lattice changes as you squish up the torus, but the B fields don't. So the same thing happens here. For these zero winding, zero momentum states, Green-Schwarz action and periodicity conditions, namely the fields are just periodic, don't change. Right, the metric on the T4, you can, whatever metric you put, you can just redefine your four axis in whatever way you want to just get the orthogonal metric at this special point. So these are completely boring for us. Here's another thing that's boring. If we turn on a C2 field, well, its gauge invariant field strength is not just DC P, but it also is a P CP minus 2 wedge H, the Never-Schwarz flux. But of course, we're in the D1, D5 brain system. This is zero. And so if you turn on a constant C2, the corresponding field strength is still zero. You don't change it. And so the equations of motion and the Bianchi identities stay same. And the Green-Schwarz action only depends on gauge invariant field strengths, which also don't change, so nothing happens. So Green-Schwarz action is the same. And this is, again, just like your flat space intuition, right? If you turn on a Ramon-Ramon potential in flat space, closed strings don't care. So does this mean that we're done, that we've shown that this modulus is equal to, that this guy doesn't do anything to the spectrum? No? Why not? Well, so what we have to check is, we have to check that when I turn on this guy, that the charge of the background doesn't change. So in particular, we have to check that, for example, QD3 is still equal to zero. Okay, and QD3 in this background well, F5 is zero, because I didn't turn on any F5. C2 is non-zero, but H is zero, because I'm in just a D-brain background. So this is still zero. So that was just one example. But in fact, I was worrying too much in this case. The charges don't change when you turn on a constant C2. Okay? And a very similar story works for the C0 modulus. So I'm not going to review that now. So just a tiny bit more involved, but if you're interested in that, you can ask me afterwards. And so all these moduli, let's see, how many of them do we have? 10 plus 6 plus 1, so that's 17, right? They do nothing. So we've called them inconsequential moduli because, well, we first wanted to say they're irrelevant, but then we got a bit worried that that might be confusing. So we called them inconsequential, and you might think, well, okay, maybe probably nothing happens for anything, right? So what's the point of all this? But that's not true. Something interesting does happen. And there's a nice sort of lesson there. So how about if we turn on some of these moduli? So the self-dual part of the B field is a modulus. And again, your flat space intuition would be, well, nothing happens, right? Zero winding, zero momentum states, who cares about the B field? They only charged under H. Well, it's certainly true that if you turn on a constant B field, the equations of motion and Bianchi identities still hold. That's very easy to check, right? Nothing really changes. Similarly, the Green-Schwarz action depends only on H. So the Green-Schwarz action doesn't change either. But there's a problem. There's a problem with the charges. if you calculate now the D3 brain charge, looks like this. You see straight away that while this term is zero, you're in the Ramon-Ramon supported background, so this guy is not zero. So basically the lesson is, well, if you can consider such a background with this non-zero, but you're no longer, this is not a modulus on its own. You're just in some other background which has got a combination of charges. And so we're not that interested in that, right? We would like to somehow get the modulus corresponding to this field. And that you can get if you, in addition to having a constant B field, add a C4 of this particular form. So F3 you already had in your background. It's just the flux supporting the ADS cross S. B, you choose however you want your moduli turned on. And now I'm saying you turn on a non-zero DC4. Okay. So that you can check. Again, I don't want to do it now, but if you're interested, I can show you. It's very simple. It solves the equations of motion and is got precisely the right charges now. So this solves equations of motion, has correct charges, namely just D1 and D5 charges. But look, DC4 is not zero, so that means that F5 now is not zero. So we've changed the Green-Schwarz action, right? The Green-Schwarz action was just coupling to F3, now we're turning on a non-zero F5, and so the initial reaction is, well, we're gonna have to work very hard now, again, like we did for several years at this particular point in moduli space, to repeat the whole analysis of scattering the states and working out the S matrix and so on. And it might be a hard calculation simply because now the Green-Schwarz action is different. It could even be, right? It could be that the theory is no longer integrable. There's no reason why it should be integrable away from this special point. But luckily, we don't have to work hard because there's a neat way that Maldacena and Russo and in more detail Wodia for the ADS-free background and collaborators came up with how you can generate this background through some simple T-duality and related transformations. So I'll tell you about that and then you'll see how you can work out the spectrum from this. So what do you have to do? Well, you have to do something called the TRT transformation, and I'll just briefly tell you what it is just now. And you have to add also a constant B field to get right charges. And since we are interested in zero winding, zero momentum, closed string states, we actually don't care because this will not modify the Green-Schwarz action for us. So we might as well just concentrate on the TRT transformation. And what is this TRT? Well, you do a T-duality in the six direction. You define some new coordinates after the T-duality, which are given by cos phi, sine phi, minus sine phi, cos phi, x6, x7, and then you t-dualize back along the six twiddle direction, okay? So it's just a very simple way to generate new solutions from old, if you want, by doing a sort of 022 transformation. And you can do, in order to get precisely the right background to correspond to the modulus, you need to do two of them. And both of them, so you do one in directions 6, 7, one in directions 8, 9, and both of them have to have exactly the same parameter, phi, and this phi is related to the modulus in some simple way. I don't want to write it down now, right? Related to what the modulus is. So after you've done this, then you obtain an action, and that action is precisely the Green-Schwarz action for this background with the modulus turned on. And the nice thing is, now you can just follow your nose, right? Typically, if you know the spectrum in a theory and then you do a T-duality, you still know the spectrum, right? And doing a field redefinition, you still know the spectrum. So a sort of quick way of saying it is that P6 and X7 prime are related to the original P6 and X7 prime by this, by the transpose of this matrix. And similarly, that P7 and X6 prime are related in this way. And these are just canonical transformations. So what I'm saying is, you can do a canonical transformation of the action to undo this TRT transformation. And the fact that we're in the zero winding, zero momentum sector also means that nothing happens to the periodicity conditions. Okay. So you can work a bit harder. You can check that fixing gauge invariance and doing the canonical quantization that we did actually goes through as well. But this sort of indicates to you that the spectrum is essentially the same. And the only thing that changes, if you remember, the spectrum depended on the radius of the ADS. And now if you rewrite the radius of the ADS in terms of the variables of this new theory, it looks like this. And this is the only place where the modulus appears. Okay. So the radius, the modulus appears here. As you turn it on, you're of course adjusting the radius. And remember, the radius enters through this function h of r into the dispersion relation. But formally, the beta equations and the S matrix look the same. There's just this change of this function h of r. Okay. So one thing that you straight away can conclude is that as you vary this moduli and then all the other moduli, which do nothing, the BPS spectrum remains exactly the same. So again, this is like a stringy proof that the half BPS spectrum doesn't receive any quantum corrections. Okay. So now let me come to the possibly sort of the most interesting part of the talk, where I'm going to say something about what happens in the case of the fundamental string and the Neve-Schwarz fiber theory. So you might think that, you know, I shouldn't be even trying this, right? Because I don't have access to this theory. But I'm going to try it anyway, right? I can write down the Green-Schwarz action and see what happens. So as before, some of the stuff are inconsequential moduli, right? And I'm not going to review that. Nothing happens when you change the metric on the four torus. And in this case, nothing happens when you change the B field. But let's turn on a constant C0. And remember, there is a fixed scalar, C4, and that fixed scalar is determined in terms of C0, it turns out, if you look at the equations. So what do we have? If I turn on a constant C0 equal to a constant, then C4 in 6, 7, 8, 9 directions turns out has to be minus C0. Okay? Now, turning on constant Ramon-Ramon potentials, well, the equations of motion and Bianchi's are fine, of course. You can just check that. It turns out that the charges are also okay. So in other words, you still only have fundamental string and Neve-Schwarz five-brain charge. For example, let's look at the D5 brain charge. Well, that's equal to F3 plus C0H But now, I got a little bit carried away. I better tell you what F3 is. I better remind you what F3 is first. So F3 is equal to dc2, and I'm probably going to get my minus signs wrong, minus c0h, that's the gauge invariant guy. C2 is 0, I'm not turning it on, so the first term is 0, but the second term is non-zero, because I'm in the Neve-Schwarz theory. So this is just equal to minus c0 times h. Okay, so that guy is non-zero. So I have a Ramon-Ramon free-form flux, and that's actually perfect. Because what I have here, if I've got my minus sign right, yeah, I get one which is minus c0h, and from here I get c0h. So there is no d5 brain charge. And then you can go a bit more painfully through all the other charges, and you also discover that there is the only charges of a fundamental string and the Neve-Schwarz 5 brain. So the charges are also okay, but the Green-Schwarz action changes, right? And it changes because F3 is non-zero now. So now I have a Green-Schwarz action which has got a non-zero Ramon-Ramon freeform and a non-zero NSNS freeform. But that sounds familiar, right? That's precisely what I had. It's probably gone now, isn't it? Yeah, that's precisely what I had formally when I was considering configurations of D brains and Neve-Schwarz 5 brains. There too, I had non-zero Ramon-Ramon and NSNS freeform flux, except that here, it's not quantized. It's proportional to the C0. So the Green-Schwarz action that I have is an action that we've already studied with integrability. I just have to find out what the parameters are now related to this modulus rather than related to the charges. So let me write those down. Whoops. So the radius now takes this form. Where the modulus appears here and the number of Neve-Schwarz 5 brains appears here. And what's important for us is how does the function h of r look like? Because that's the guy that goes into the dispersion relation, right? So basically the beta equations, right, and the S matrix are exactly the same as in this mixed charge setting, except that the function h now looks like this. I should say this is with a Q twiddle in it as well. Minus C0 KGS divided by 2 pi. So it's this that appears in the dispersion relation here. And that's quite nice, right? Because when you do this integrability story, right, you're used to this being the Toft coupling constant, lambda. So C0K, maybe with the G string, doesn't really matter for me, plays the role, it seems, of the Toft coupling. So the way to think about it is as follows, is that if I turn off this modulus, I just have a Vesumino-Witten model. I read Maldacena Oguri, and they have this super simple spectrum, right? Then I turn on this modulus within the same theory, right? So it's very easy to identify what is the operator in that theory, and I can turn it on by a tiny, tiny amount, any amount I want. And I turn on these integrable interactions, and then I have a beta ansatz type description with each excitation, you know, behaving in this way. Okay. So I think what's nice is, right, this really opens the door for people who are interested in Vesuvio-Witten models, right? Because what I'm saying is that, you know, they always stayed at this special point, this M0 point, where there were no extra moduli turned on because it was simplest there, and turning on the moduli was kind of hard, I suppose. But what I'm saying is there must be some nice structure that's going to emerge when you turn that on. All this integrability structure is going to be there. So you're going to go from a CFD to an integrable theory in this way. So I think that's, you know, that's better than what we had here. And again, I should say, of course, the half BPS spectrum is, the story is exactly the same. It doesn't care what the modulus is, simply because it's got zero winding and zero momentum. So if you want, now we've proven across the whole moduli space, both in the D1, D5, and the Never-Schwarz 1, Never-Schwarz 5 theories, that the spectrum is protected to all orders. And I guess another thing that I should say is that we've written down, so when you turn on this self-dual B field, people manage to write down the full back-reacted geometry using this TRT trick that was essentially the motivation originally. So you can play a similar sort of game, and when you turn on the C0, we also know what the full back, through some u-duality stuff, we know the full back-reacted geometry. And I haven't had time here, I think I probably won't say now, but you can ask me afterwards. It's quite straightforward to incorporate, as you can imagine, the self-dual C2, and there's a corresponding TRT transformation there as well. So all in all the moduli fit in to this description. Okay, so let me conclude. So integrability finds for you exact spectrum of ADS3 S3T4 for all moduli. And we've only done this now for Never-Schwarz and D-brain configurations, but you know, some simple work in progress is going to show this for all charge configurations too. So all charges. The half BPS spectrum really is protected. To all orders in alpha prime across all moduli. As a nice sort of curiosity, we can find the back reacted solutions. And the UV, if you want. And I think what's particularly nice, right, is that we're at a point where we can try to look at to link to the WZW model and integrability. And of course, there's lots of interesting questions there about, for example, how, you know, the Yangian of this integrable structure is or isn't related to the CFD structure and so on. So I think that's quite a lot of fun things to do. Much of what I said is also true, so that's also work to appear shortly. For this background, there are far fewer moduli. I think there are only really two moduli, but there is this interesting modulus, this Ramon-Ramon scalar as well, so you could take the Vesuvio-Witten theory on this model and turn it on as well and study integrability. But I think the real goal here is that I've stuck, as you can see, really strongly to the ADS side, right? I haven't said anything about the dual CFT. Now, it's widely believed that this should be the symmetric N orbifold of T4 and something more mysterious here. But I think it's fairly clear, it's sort of becoming fairly clear that that answer is wrong and is too simple. That the symmetric N orbifold will encode certainly the supersymmetric information, right? So people have calculated protected operators, correlation functions, three-point functions, and so on, for protected operators, and matched them between the Vesuvio-Witten model, for example, and the symmetric and orbifold. But I think if you're going to start asking questions about non-protected quantities, it'll be much harder to match, and more likely the story will be more involved. And so basically the statement is any CFT statement that you want to give me on the CFT2 side has to match onto this integrability construction, which is valid to all orders. And maybe one way to look at it is to think of some sort of novel Toft-like limit related to this. I think I'll stop here. Thank you.
Just a comment. I think it's clear that the symmetric overflow theory just describes one point in the model space.
I don't think it even describes that.
Talks a little. Well, this is the following. So let's take that to be true. What I'm saying is that I think some of these results essentially just. So the one theory is 4.4, right? No matter what.
Yeah.
So I think some of these results follow from the fact that, you know, exactly marginal operator. Okay, so moduli correspond to exactly marginal operators in the boundary theory. And the, it's a question about the representation theory of the superconformal algebra, 4.4. Mm-hmm. I think the point is that both for 2.2 and for 4.4, it is known that a marginal operator cannot cease to be marginal. That's not the case, for example, in Fortean equals 1 theories.
Right.
So I think what you're saying here from this bulk point of view is something that follows from a detailed analysis of.
So I'm saying two things, right? One is about the half BPS states.
What I think is a group of for both cases. I mean, there are different multiples. One of them are exactly marginal multiples. The other one are other types of multiples. And there is a question about where these multiples, they're shorter, right?
Yeah.
The question is, can they ever comply kinematically?
Right.
So I'm not sure about the number two, but for number one, I think I know that the exact marginal multiple of 4.4 cannot combine with anything.
Good, but my statement is a little bit right. So, good. So that should be quite a nice thing to make to work together. But my statement is also about long multiples. So, for example,
long multiples, I have nothing to say.
You give me a generic closed string state, and for 16 of those moduli, nothing happens, right? And that sounds, right, so that's very similar to symmetric NT4, right, where it's only the Z2 twisted circle that really does anything. If you do anything to the T4, nothing much happens. So that's kind of nice, right? But so maybe I need to hear a bit more about from you about the half BPS states. Yeah, as I say, I've given seminars where people say this is obvious, and others who have told me that it isn't obvious that they are protected. In any case, I mean, I don't mind if it's obvious or not obvious. What I'm saying is this is, you know, a nice way to show.
Well, this number one is not obvious. It's a detailed question about the superconformal algebra.
Good.
I mean, it's not generic that.
The number one is non-protected states here.
Sorry,
you mean number two?
I mean the moduli.
So the moduli are, but also all the higher BPS states, the higher half BPS states are also protected.
Yeah, that I don't know in detail, but the other one it follows from some detail.
Right, so I see. So for the moduli, yeah, but what I'm saying is for all of these states that Jan de Boer found in 98, nothing happens as you vary the moduli.
So that must mean the explanation must be that they cannot combine with anything.
Right, it must be. I agree, yeah. But again, depending on who I speak to, they either tell me it's obvious or it's not. So maybe one should.
Like Dolan and Osborne had to work very hard to derive all these branching rules for supercomputers. So it's a very detailed question that I'm not sure. Yeah, I'm sure for any 4.4 it's not, but I don't know.
Okay.
If these things have been.
And you see here, where the protected states are quarter BPS, and it's a large 4.4.
Yeah, for that, I don't know anything about the
right. So again, what I'm saying is that all those quarter BPS states now are protected.
So they're not lifted either? No?
They are not lifted either. The ones, once you find the right ones, there is. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Yeah,
I
have a question.